welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's the ideal, if uncommon, moment in a criminal trial. A witness takes the stand, points to the defendant, and says, yes, that is the person who did it. Eyewitness accounts such as that were once held as the gold standard in testimony, but new brain science and an ongoing spate of wrongful convictions is rapidly changing that view. And next week, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court will hear four cases that seek to make critical changes in the way such testimony is handled in criminal trials in the state. So for more on that, we're joined by Rosanna Cavallaro. She's a law professor at Suffolk University and member of a special study group on eyewitnesses commissioned by the SJC last year. Professor Cavallaro, welcome to you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So just to be clear, first and foremost, the SJC commissioned this special group before we knew that these four cases were going to appear before the justices.
Yes, because not operating in a vacuum, but because two other state Supreme Courts had taken on this issue, and in one instance, the state court had appointed a special master to dig into the science and try to integrate it with law. And here the SJC handled it this way by convening this study group.
Okay, so first of all, just walk us very briefly, if you could, through what the latest science is telling us on the reliability of eyewitness testimony.
Well, as you suggested, the wrongful conviction stuff that's been unfolding over the past few years demonstrates that there's a very high correlation between the wrongful convictions and the presence of eyewitness testimony in those cases, as high as 75%. And again, just to emphasize, with all good faith by all actors, that is to say, witnesses who genuinely think that they got it right, want to get it right. It's not like this is about intentional deception. But what we've come to learn, the social science has told us, is that people are just not as good at identifying others as they think they are, and that there are many, many variables that affect the creation, retention, and retrieval of a memory. That is, a memory exists in those kind of three stages, and that there can be different variables that affect our accuracy with respect to each of those stages.
Right. I mean, I see one study cited by the American Psychological Association that shows that, 40% of witnesses who made positive identifications were wrong, even though they had high confidence, 90% to 100% in their identifications.
That's right. And one of the particular sort of sub-concerns in this area is when witnesses express that level of confidence, that a juror is going to hear that as something, oh, I can take that to the bank. The witness says I'm positive. I'm sure they might even assign a number to their level of certainty. And what social science says is there isn't really a great correlation between that expression of certainty and the actual accuracy of the witness, again, with all good faith and best intentions.
Okay. So your group actually has recommended several changes. Again, they're independent of these cases that are going to be heard next week. Specifically, that judges perhaps should give special jury instructions to remind jurors that eyewitness testimony is not 100% accurate?
That's right. And really what the goal of the recommendations is to give jurors a kind of a mini education on what the social science has said, and to highlight for jurors that it might really be in contradiction to what their own intuited good sense says about eyewitness identification. So the study group recognized, as have a number of other courts, the importance of a judge getting jurors up to speed about that knowledge. So they put whatever any individual witness says about an identification in the context of this bigger picture of what we know about witnesses' capacity in general.
Okay, I have a question about that, though, because defense attorneys already can just call into question. They can raise objections about any witness they want. I mean, isn't that enough?
Well, that's a good question, and I think that's part of the concern and part of what led the study group to be so careful about how they phrased the jury instructions that have been recommended. Because what you don't want is a judge saying, don't believe this witness, or a judge saying, you should be skeptical about this witness. So what the proposed instructions do is say, here's some things you should know about memory. And these things do not direct you as to how you should weigh any particular witness's testimony, but to give you that context.
But on the other hand, I mean, I imagine a lot of prosecutors are saying that even just allowing that one limited instruction by the judge automatically undermines the importance of this person's testimony in the minds of the jurors. I mean, Suffolk County DA Dan Connolly filed a brief in one of the cases that the SJC is going to hear next week, saying that it's not the judge to decide the weight of evidence, and basically it's up to the juries to decide.
That's absolutely true, but judges do bear the responsibility of making sure the jury understands that responsibility and brings to bear all the information that's out there to help them evaluate a witness's testimony. So to the extent that a district attorney or a prosecutor is concerned about this tipping the scale the other way, we also have to be mindful of the intuited context that jurors are bringing to eyewitness identification. What you said earlier, that they think it's the gold standard, that they think if someone says they're sure, well, then they must be right. And we know, as a matter of science, that that's not the case. So how do we integrate those two pieces of knowledge?
Again, I'm just asking you sort of a perspective from, say, the law enforcement, questions from the perspective of law enforcement or from prosecutors, because we hear often already that it's already difficult for them to get eyewitnesses to be willing to testify in the first place in many trials. Won't this just make it that much harder if word gets out that the nature of their testimony is going to basically be called into question?
Well, I hope not. And I think any witness, again, acting in good faith and bringing what they can to the jury should be willing to say, I understand that I am human like anybody else and that I am no better or worse than average people at being able to accurately remember what happened in a 30-second robbery when there was a gun in my face. And I might not know what science knows about how distracting that gun is or how much that might undermine what I think I remember.
Hmm. Well, sweeping changes have already been made in states like New Jersey, where judges are required now to tell jurors that eyewitness testimony, quote, must be scrutinized carefully and that memory is not like a video recording. Do you think we should go that far in Massachusetts?
I think saying something like that is appropriate. That is to say, again, with the corollary instruction that this does not tell you, jury, what to do with any particular witness's testimony that you've heard. But I think jurors don't know right now, by and large, that memory is not like a videotape. We think it is. We think you take it in and it just stays there intact and perfect and just comes right out when you press play. And we really don't function that way. We function much more complexly.
Well, Rosanna Cavallaro is a professor at Suffolk University Law School. She was a member of the study group which recommended some changes to eyewitness identification procedures to the Supreme Judicial Court. The SJC will be hearing four cases on eyewitness testimony next week. And you can find a link to the recommendations from the group at radioboston.org. Professor Cavallaro, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Listeners, stay with us. There's more in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.